Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Welcome to Leadership on the Line. I'm Dr. Burton A. Clark, your host. Today's topic, Firefighter Mayday Doctrine, Where Are We Now? I'll be back in a moment with my panel.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to Leadership on the Line. My panel today are represented by Captain Jesse Wilson with the Philadelphia Fire Department in Pennsylvania, Battalion Chief Greg Collier with the Mount Laurel Fire Department in New Jersey, Assistant Chief Brent Bowman with the Prince William County Fire Department in Virginia, and Captain Derek Alconis with the Los Angeles County Fire Department. Welcome, gentlemen. We're delighted that you're here today. Basically, what we're going to talk about is what your organizations are doing when it comes to Mayday Doctrine, because I know all of you are deeply involved in that process. So why don't we start with you, Derek? Why don't you give us a little update in terms of what you're involved with right now in terms of Mayday?
Well, this is Derek Alconis. Right now we're working with the International Association of Firefighters and the International Association of Fire Chiefs. And NIOSH is also participating in this effort to create a fire ground survival program. And within that program, we use the term Mayday to identify when a member is in need of immediate assistance. And the program contains several chapters, of which it kind of gives guidelines of what a member should do to be prepared for a Mayday, and then what they should do when a Mayday occurs, and also all those skills that are necessary to get themselves out of that situation, and also the incident commander's responsibilities as well. So currently we're looking to complete the curriculum within the next month, and then we're going to go and do some beta testing around the country with that program.
That's great. Thanks, Cap. Chief Bowman, I know that a year or so ago, Prince William County lost a firefighter who did try to call Mayday. Can you talk about what your organization is doing as a result of that incident?
Well, sure. We actually had been doing a lot of Mayday and RIT training prior to the April 16th, 2007 event where we lost firefighter Kyle Wilson. And because of that training, if you listen to the radio tape from that incident, Kyle does everything exactly right. He calls the Mayday exactly as he had been instructed. We went back, and unfortunately we weren't able to get to him. We went back and reviewed what training he had and tried to find out what happened, because we don't know what exactly occurred up on the second floor of that house when Kyle got lost. So we interviewed his fellow members of his recruit school and said, what did you get out of your firefighter survival training, and what would you have done in that situation? We found out that about half of the class said, I'm going to try to find any way I can to get out to self-rescue. And another half of the class said, well, I'm going to sit still and wait for the RIT team to come and get me. So we realized we had a little bit of a disconnect in what we were teaching our people. So we have done several things. We've extended our firefighter survival training, which we do in recruit school. It was a three-day class. We've extended it to 4 days to spend more time on practical evolutions of self-extricating, self-rescue, various things that they can do to make sure they understand the different things that they can do if they are in a Mayday situation. And we've done more battalion training, where we've mandated all members of our department to go to some further RIT training to know how the RIT team needs to react and what they need to do to try to get a firefighter that's in trouble out. We have been doing this for quite a while, and included in that training was use of the radio, and there's been talk about how to use radio in a Mayday. And what we have found is that by practicing this and actually using the radio, pressing the emergency activation button, and having our communication center react to it. We have done enough practicing that our people did it correctly. And I can't stress that enough, is your people need to practice, and you practice with the radio, practice with full gear, and doing all the things of self-rescue and the RIT activation of how to get a firefighter out.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Chief. Chief Greg Collier, New Jersey is doing something at a state level. Can you share with us what you're doing?
Sure. Our state Firemen's Convention every year has a very limited classroom program, and we were looking to do some hands-on this year. We conducted the Train the Trainer in April of this year. We had about 35 participants from throughout the state come and do the hands-on and the classroom portion of the program. We expect those people to go back to their communities and their fire academies. Most fire academies in New Jersey are county-based, so we training, and Captain Dan Spiegel from Wildwood City and I really facilitated it. We got a lot of people to participate in the program. We put on the training. We hope, again, to do that this year at the convention. We're going to have that. That'll be in September. And we expect to get a lot more training out to the fire service, especially hands-on. In my department, when we did the hands-on class, we had a captain and a battalion chief and two lieutenants come to the training, and we've completed 100% of our people with the Mayday training. Again, we had done some of it collectively before and after. The most important part I find is that we concentrated on calling the Mayday rather than incorporating it into some other training as an adjunct. This was the concentration, and now the next level will be some save-your-own training, some RIT training. But we're teaching our people, our firefighters, and our incident commanders the importance of the Mayday parameters and how to respond to them. Joe Vallow from Jersey City has also been teaching through our Division of Fire Safety the classroom portion. And he said that he's really surprised how many chief officers he's getting into the classroom portion, and he actually does the radio portion for them. And he concentrates on that in the classroom. And I think that's as important as the actual practical portion, where we built the props. We had, 30 people at a time going through the props. I think that's a real big win-win for us.
Well, very good, Chief. I appreciate that. And now, finally, your opening comments from Captain Jesse Wilson with the Philadelphia Fire Department. Captain, can you share with us what Philly's doing?
Well, as you are aware, we have a 2,400-member department, 90 companies. And the Mayday parameters we learned about by reading your articles posted on firehouse.com plugged in nicely to our RIT training and our cellar fire training. So over 12 weeks, we were able to take care of all 90 companies, and we, too, have 100% compliance. What we did was run three. Days a week until we were finished, each and every company. And then we held, we scheduled dates for members who were either on vacation or weren't available to show up during the regular scheduled appointments here. Now, I have to add, we typically, when we begin to do any kind of training, target the entire department, and it becomes a bit of a problem because in the past we have done eight-hour day training, and that becomes a bit of a problem because it takes so long to do it. Mayday training fit right into our new approach, which is called module training. Again, 3 hours a day or 4 hours a day, two-day sessions, and we found that we can get through the entire department fairly rapidly, and we...
Great. That's a major commitment for a large metropolitan fire department to do something like that, Cap. I really do appreciate that. Let me go back to this through the group of you and just get a little philosophical for a minute, if I may, because there is that component to this whole idea of a firefighter calling Mayday. Let's start with you, Captain Alconis. Do you think our culture is actually changing that it's okay for a firefighter to call Mayday? Have we tipped that balance of that's the first thing I'm going to think about when something happens, as opposed to the last thing I'm going to think about? You're still out there in the trenches, Cap. What's going on out there?
Well, I think there still is some hesitation. I think nationwide, I mean, in the committee that I'm working with, that is a pretty good representation of the entire North American Fire Service. I think all of those people that participate in the development of this program would say we're still not where we need to be in terms of our members recognizing that they're in trouble and they need to e-trigger or call that Mayday. And it's, some would say it's due to a lack of training, a lack of not knowing where, you know, what situation really does constitute a Mayday. Have we defined it? And I know you have defined it in some of your research, and within the Fire Ground Survival Program that we're developing, it is clearly defined in there. But it takes practice, like the other gentleman mentioned. It takes, you know, and you got to constantly review these topics and constantly exercise the management of the Mayday and the visualizing of these problems and going through the steps to make it more comfortable. And then once you see it, you're going to do it. And so I really think that we need to put forth a larger effort throughout North American Fire Service in ensuring that our people know that once I see this situation, it requires this response. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've seen in my experience.
Very good. Chief Bowman, as a result of the department losing Kyle, that had to put the whole idea of Mayday up front in for everybody. You know, how do you think the culture of your department has changed when it comes to it's okay to call a Mayday?
Well, we had pushed and practiced Mayday training quite a bit beforehand, and we have actually had a Mayday that occurred before Kyle's, and we've had one that have occurred since then. So we're starting to make that change in our people's minds that it's okay to call a Mayday. Of course, after Kyle's event, everybody was looking at, you know, truly recognizing the dangers out there. As Captain Alconis says, some of our people don't recognize that they're getting themselves in trouble, and we've been trying to push that, recognize the dangers that are out there, especially in suburban America, lightweight construction. It's conditions are changing rapidly, and you have to be prepared for that. We've actually done several things that we've changed. We emphasized again and again that it's better to call a Mayday than not, even if you don't need it. And it's kind of like when we send a whole task force assignment to a structure fire, when the caller says it's just a smoking toaster. It's better to be on the front end and be safe and send more, and the same thing for the Mayday. It's better to call for the Mayday. If you don't need it, you can get it yourself, you can cancel it, but call early to get everything started. We know how long it takes for a RIT team to get activated, get in, and to get somebody out. It's not an easy process, so we push that in our people. Is call early. Call as soon as you even think you're having any trouble. One of the other things that we have changed since that event is, and we've been pushing this throughout the region, we're getting a little pushback from it, is we make our third arriving engine the RIT engine, whereas before in a lot of places it was the fourth arriving engine. And we realized that we need that crew in place early to be set up to react to a Mayday. In Kyle's situation, the third engine was supposed to have been the RIT engine, but it got reassigned. So when the Mayday was called, there was not a RIT in place, and everybody had to adjust and try to react to that situation. So that's one thing that we're pushing, is you have to get that writ established early. And it's better that it's not used, but you have to have it there in case you need it.
Yeah.
Because firefighters are getting in trouble. Hey, Bert, this is Brett. We actually forced all of our firefighters, chief officers down to the newest member, to do Mayday transmissions probably about 5 or 6 when we do that training. 5 or 6, 7 times that they actually have to make that radio transmission, push that button, say what their issue is, trying to ingrain that, how they do it, into them so they can do it the way Kyle did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, my whole thing, Chief, is that look how often we make them practice tying knots.
Exactly.
Well, we better make them practice calling Mayday just as many times.
Yeah, and we've actually done that in just about every battalion training we've done, even if it wasn't Mayday training. We had them go into a corner, call a Mayday. Here's your situation.
Yep.
And one of the arguments on the other side is you'll hear people say, well, we should practice more in preventing it than actually performing the Mayday. And I think we're all in a disagreement to that idea that, you know, sometimes you just don't know. And when you review a lot of these near misses and close calls and talk to these individuals that have been caught in these flashover conditions, it happens so fast. And they were separated from their crew very quickly. And they were feeling as if they were making all the right moves. And then
right.
Something changed.
Yep.
And, you know, even the best of firefighters have mentioned that, you know, they've experienced these close calls. Well, because you don't know when you're going to be stuck in that position, you need to know what to do in the event that something is to happen. So it is just as important to have this type of training as it is to have the training that's necessary to prevent it.
Well, I just go back and look at the whole aviation model teaching pilots to eject. They have to do that for their whole career, and they have to recertify on that every 6 months for 20 years. As long as they're flying, they have to recertify on that competency to be able to eject at the cognitive, affective, and psychomotor. And if they don't, they're grounded until they pass that. So that's taking that skill set very seriously.
And Bert, that's exactly what we plugged into our program. We remind them of the information that you discovered through your research, and we found that the same thing is true. Our firefighters have to be conditioned. The culture has to be changed. And the way to do that, and I don't remember the gentleman's name, but they have to do that at least 12 times when they're here. We've set up the obstacles similar to the ones that your articles talked about, but they're modular, reconfigurable. We
right.
configure them. So while they're here for the 3 or 4 hours, they go through the SCBA Confidence/Mayday course several times. And we find that at the end of the training, they have been conditioned. Now, what our studies don't tell us is whether that's going to be lasting conditioning. But we can see the difference between when they get here at 0800 and when they leave here at 1200 hours. There is clearly a difference in their performance.
Right. And that's – hopefully you're still recording this because this is good stuff, Danny. That's our challenge. And that was actually – One of my questions here to the group is we're doing this training, but then how do we make sure it's being followed up and causing behavior changes on the fire ground? And that's what we have to start investigating and researching to make sure, number one, they're doing it, number two, they have the skill sets to do it, and it's actually resulting in firefighters being pulled out and saved.
Yeah, and this is Derek. If you don't mind if I interject.
Oh, please jump in, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the purpose of the program we're trying to develop, is that there's a lot of fire departments. The fire departments that are represented in this group today are fire departments that are being proactive. You know, they're going above what's available to them to create a realistic environment where their people are trained in knowing what to do when a Mayday, you know, occurs. But there's so many other fire departments out there that are not doing this. Hence the reason for a national type curriculum that everybody can buy into. And it's important that as we respond in a mutual and automatic aid agreement, environment, that with all those fire departments that are represented on that response know exactly what to do. That chief that comes in from outside of the area, he knows how to manage that mayday just as well as that firefighter or that chief who has responsibility of that first in district. So it's important that we're all on the same page, that it's not just the L.A. County Fire Department. Well, we respond with Los Angeles City as well and some of our other smaller agencies in our area. They also have to know exactly what the firefighter is going to do inside, so they know how to manage that from the outside. And, you know, as we discuss this, it's real critical that everybody on the incident knows what's going to happen when that mayday call goes down.
So let me give a question to the whole group now, in that because we are going to be doing more mutual aid, have any of you reached out to your surrounding jurisdictions to find out what they're doing or tried to do things regionally when it comes to this whole mayday idea? How about you, Derek?
You know, we have worked with L.A. City recently. In fact, they just trained all 3,500 firefighters in their firefighter down procedures, because we're still not using the term mayday here in the state of California. Well, that's another topic we can discuss later on. But anyway, going through that, they found that, yes, there's a lot of their firefighters didn't know the skills that are necessary to how to transmit their emergency over the radio, and also the skills necessary to become disentangled and to, you know, the low profile skills and all of that. And so we've worked with them and in making sure we know what they're going to do and they know what we're going to do if a firefighter is to go down. So, there's, you know, that's just one instance. We have other fire departments that we respond with as well, like Burbank, Glendale, and all of those that we have not reached out to, and that's the next step.
Very good. How about Prince William County there, Chief Bowen?
Well, we're in Northern Virginia, and Northern Virginia has been very proactive in taking a regional approach to things. Fairfax County, Arlington County, Alexandria were at the forefront, where they started automatic aid many, many, many years ago, back in the late 70s. And then they started writing to where they had their operational procedures, so they all operated the same. And that's just expanded out in Northern Virginia into Prince William and Loudoun County and down to Stafford and others. So we're all in the development phase of making up new procedures, and then we institute them regionally. And so we've been on the forefront probably of regional operations with 6 to 8 different large counties all adopting and operating basically the same way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we've got a unique situation up there in New Jersey, because most of your fire departments are local cities or boroughs. You know, how do you address this interoperability, if you will, of this whole mayday doctrine?
Well, I think the most important focus is we're doing this as statewide training, and that's the avenue we're trying to take it through our Division of Fire Safety, through our continuing education program in conjunction with the Division of Fire Safety. I mentioned earlier that Joe Vallow from Jersey City has been teaching the classroom portion. And in the classroom portion, he's doing that hands-on with chief officers, as important as doing the skills with the firefighter. When we use the National Fire Academy program, that's a clear, concise program. We went through some of those challenges, it sounds like L.A. County's going through, with not using the word mayday. Our legislative process, because the law process puts the ability on our State Division of Fire Safety to write regulations, and when they're published, we had all kinds of comments about not using mayday. Some of it was confusion, some of it was people don't want to
used the word Mayday because they wanted urgent message or emergency traffic, whatever it is, and the program allows for change, but Mayday is so clear. And that's something I think that's important, is to get everybody on the same page. I think we're doing that. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think we're making good progress with it. And as we keep doing it, we'll just keep, you know, we'll get more people to buy in. That's cultural change. That's what we have to do with that. As important as that, I think Captain Aldonis mentioned this, is you have to have, the firefighter has to have the situational awareness. I recently took a course through our division called Reading Smoke, and I thought, how important is it to show the firefighters, you know, if you're putting them in either burn buildings or flashover simulators, and then teaching them the skills of what that when those conditions change so fast, you know, putting the things like fire behavior, putting this all as a package together. Philadelphia is teaching modules. Well, maybe you have to have module 1, 2, 3, and 4 so that, you know, you put those pieces together, because the today we don't go to as many fires as we used to. And, you know, make that change. But you got to do a package, not just little pieces. And I think that's some of the things that – that's a challenge for us, today's fire service.
You know, let me – you mind if I interject there, Bert? This is Derek.
Please do.
Okay. In response to that, the IFF and the IFC program, and looking at the NIOSH reports and looking at the Firefighter Close Call website and looking at the through the near misses and all of those things, we've learned a lot. And what we've learned in this developing this fire ground survival curriculum was that you do need all of those pieces, just as you mentioned, Chief. And so the sections right now that are being developed are, the first one is preventing the Mayday, and it goes over the situational awareness and crew continuity and the ability to read smoke and all the things that you just mentioned, which is real critical. We want to prevent it first. The second piece is getting ready for that Mayday. What is the equipment that you need? What's necessary? You know, where should the radio be? How about the dispatch? What are their responsibilities? Are they really ready? Are they trained? How should they be trained? How should they respond over the radio? All of these issues are introduced in the curriculum, and also the crew accountability system and all of that. And the next section, which is Chapter 3, goes into self-survival procedures. So now you need to call the Mayday. Something needs to happen. There should be a procedure that we follow, that we anticipate from, if we're an outside, we're the incident commander, we should anticipate certain actions that firefighter is going to perform. And they're going to go through those procedures every time. And then the next one is self-survival skills, which is the entrapment, the ladder bail, the rope slides, the hose slides, all of those type things. And then the last one is, what are the firefighter expectations of command? What am I going to think about as I'm inside trapped and I'm the firefighter? What do I want that incident commander to do to help save me? And so I think that's a pretty comprehensive program dedicated to that firefighter and dedicated to the chief that is responsible, and also the crew that will have experienced the loss of that firefighter, all of that. And we don't really much get into the RIC because we feel like that's a whole other program that needs to be developed. But within that, currently we're going through the National Fire Academy's curriculum review process to get that as an NFA-offered course. And that way the states can use it, you know, for... firefighter and such. So that's where we stand right now. I just wanted to make sure that that's understood.
Very good. Let me throw this question out to the panel. What's been your experience with the reaction to the firefighters when they do go through this Mayday training? How is it being received? Anybody, everybody.
Let me take a stab at that. This is Jesse from Philadelphia. Of course we get pushback. We're in a good position now. I'm not sure about your departments now, but because of the deferred retirement option program, the drop program, we're losing thousands of years of experience every month, which means that we've hired an awful lot of people recently. We've hired over 500 people in the last two years. Well, we've internalized the Mayday training with our newest people. Now, as a result, when we bring the veteran members up in their companies, I think I described that process to you earlier, but the pushback we anticipated, while we get some of it, we don't get it as strongly as maybe we would have in the past. Again, our department is changing. It's younger. Our chiefs are younger. Our company officers are younger. And we've got at least a 30% turnover since the drop started. Bragging, I think that the module program and the short training format that it's built around kind of resisted that pushback that we anticipated, and we happily didn't see. We feel that, you know, in short order, it was effective and that we should see good results.
Did some post-training video to kind of capture the students' experience, and these were very experienced firefighters and experienced trainers. Can you kind of give us a synopsis of what their reaction to the training was?
Well, I think their comments were, I think they used the word phenomenal most often, but they actually did the practice, they did the scenarios, and they saw what it was like to fall through the floor, to become trapped, to have your microphone lost, to have your arm stuck where you couldn't reach your microphone, but it was an inch away. And I think we've all done some sort of training, but we didn't put it through the Mayday, alerting the parameters, and then actually doing it, and then receiving the response from command. I think that's so basic and so important in firefighter survival. But many times I've seen firefighter survival courses where they're including that as a 5-minute piece during a day of rescue, rescue tactics on saving your own training or fire. Five-minute portion versus the whole, you know, you're learning that skill right up front, and that's I think that's the foundation of saving firefighters' lives. This program.
Yeah, in we are recording this show, but in I think it was today or yesterday's Firehouse. Paul Combs is his cartoon is actually a firefighter that's snared in some wires, and he has two people, and the caption says, "Why are you listening to him? You're alone in trouble. Call the freaking Mayday." And that's the angel firefighter, and the devil firefighter says, "Don't be a weenie, you can get out of this." You know, until we overcome that psychological blockage that, you know, I'm the hero, I don't need to be rescued, I rescue other people, that's a major stumbling block that we have to get to. One of the ways, is anybody out there doing any post-incident investigation in terms of near misses where somebody does call Mayday? Does anybody have any protocols in place where they actually go back and interview the people that called the Mayday? Anybody?
Yes, this is Brad Bowman and Prince William. We have just instituted a whole incident quality assurance program for fire incidents. And it is based that one of the times that this is done, anytime there's a Mayday declared, this investigation will take place, and it's headed up by our health and safety office, and they will work with the incident commander and whoever was involved in the incident. And it's all part of our CQI, continuous quality improvement effort. It's not, there's no fault finding. This is how do we make the system better. And so there's a whole processes to go through to start the investigation, identifying what happened, what occurred. And the whole approach is we take the approach, and this kind of came from the near-miss doctrine, is we're all humans. All humans make mistakes. So let's explore why the system allowed or failed to accommodate your mistake, and then how do we improve the system so that it won't happen again?
Right. Is anybody else doing anything?
Yeah, Derek from L.A. County. We do the same thing. In fact, last year, I think it was in May, my crew was caught in a flashover, and we had one of our members burned, a third-degree burns, and he was off the job for about 6 months. And they did a complete review, and it's not unusual for us to do a complete investigation with the safety officer, with video interviews, debriefings and everything with every member who responded to that incident. And this was just an example of that. So.
Mm-hmm. Part of the challenge is to really be able to get into that psychological tipping point, if you will, when a firefighter makes that affective decision, I need to call this Mayday. And really, the only ones that we can get good information are those that survive. Because you can't interview the victims that don't survive, so you really can't get that psychological aspect of the event. I don't know that we're there yet. That may be something we need to work on in terms of how we actually do that kind of interview to get that deep psychological understanding, because sometimes people don't even understand their own behavior. So it's very difficult for them to explain it. And then particularly if they think or they're led to think they did something wrong, or they're not being this macho firefighter, that's another barrier that gets in the way of really getting to the understanding of what's going on in our brains when we're faced with this kind of condition. So maybe that's some future kind of research that can be worked on.
And I think this is Derek again from LA County. I think that our own members like to hear the stories from other firefighters. You know, the story that this firefighter tells of being caught in this flashover and what he went through without the hose line, people listen, and he makes his little tours around to different training academies throughout the Los Angeles County and Orange County areas, and it's a compelling story, and it points to the fact that you need to be trained in knowing how to recognize the situation, and we did, he says, but didn't get out and fast enough, you know, and he talks about the importance of the training. And within the Fireground Survival Program, we have a lot of these stories told by the firefighter in first person. Some of them are in video format, and some of them are in written format in the text. And your eyes are drawn to those experiences because you want to learn from them. And it is important that we get the word out from those people who've survived, and they can tell us about it and tell us what's important. And, you know, what really do our firefighters need to learn to prevent it, and also what to do once you're in it.
Okay. Let me ask you folks this. What is it that your department's going to be doing next? I mean, you're doing great stuff right this minute, but what do you see on the horizon for you when it comes to this whole idea of firefighter Mayday doctrine? Captain Wilson?
Continuing it. Professional development for our company officers. We think that our organization isn't much different than other organizations or other organizations. We think that the most critical level in our group is the first line supervisor, the company officer. And we realize that whatever we do at the task level or do at the strategic level won't happen across the organization unless we get the first line supervisors on board. And we believe that to continue changing the culture, we believe to continue this conditioning that we talked about a few moments ago, we have to get to the company officers. So unlike what we've done in the past is just give people bars and then tell them, you know, trial by fire, you'll learn when you get there. And again, I should defend the organization. We have an officer development program. But part of this module program I've talked about so much is going to be a focus on our first-line supervisors, and that's where we are next, professional development for company officers, ongoing. We've actually thought about rolling of continuing education credit hours or a requirement for Con Ed credit hours into that professional development. So we think that we can change the culture and keep it changed and save lives just by concentrating on that first line supervisor.
That's great. Greg, what do you see after your September hands-on training at your state convention? What's next?
Well, as I mentioned before, I see us training trainers and then whether you call it facilitating or instigating more training. Give people the tools, the resources they need to go back and do this. One of the things that I find I've gotten a number of emails and calls on is the props. Sometimes people find it hard to either build or facilitate the props. We built three sets of props for the training that we do. We're going to use them again in September. But we built them where it's simple enough, even the floor collapse. Everything can be put into a pickup truck or a van. So we'll make those props available. New Jersey isn't that big. You can get anywhere in probably an hour and a half or 2 hours, depending upon traffic. The next thing I see is continuing education, especially through our State Division of Fire Safety. And then much like the IAFC, IFF project that Derek's working on is put that in modules where you can relate that to, I think I mentioned it earlier, the, you know, fire behavior and situational awareness. So I think that's the next step we have to bring this to. I didn't find it hard getting people to accept the training. Guys love doing hands-on training, especially when it comes to safety. So I think we're making a cultural change.
That's great. Chief Bowman, you've given us some idea in terms of what Prince Williams County is doing. What other kind of things do you see in a little bit more distant future?
Well, the one thing that we need to work on more is the whole integration of all the parts. And we've heard talk about this here today. You know, we work with the firefighters and the crews about declaring a May Day. We work with the command officer on their command role. We've done some training with the dispatchers, and we need to put all of that together in training probably in the next 6 months, where we will have the whole – I'll be doing this in our – we do battalion burns every year. We bring everybody in. And one of those scenarios will be that May Day situation where it's all put together, where the firefighter has to call the May Day, the command officer has to switch everybody else to an alternate channel so it keeps the May Day clear, the dispatchers have to do their part, and where it's all combined in one evolution. As we've done in the past, it's all been in separate modules per se, and now we've got to put it all together and make the whole system work. The one thing in the Kyle Wilson incident, we didn't do a good job of changing over the radio talk group to free up the talk group that the Mayday was on. The dispatchers knew what they were supposed to do, but when the command officer didn't let them do that, then they stopped doing it. So we got to put the whole picture together and practice that.
Well, Derek, you've kind of explained to us what's going on with the IFF and IFSC, but I'm going to put you on the spot as a company captain. Do you think your crew is 100% competent in their ability to call May Day?
Well, you don't know until you get to that point, right? You really don't know. But I know this. I know that we've practiced. I know that we practiced on a routine basis. In fact, one of the things that we do at our station is that we have everybody get their radios, and the morning lineup, which is, you know, morning briefing, I guess, in some areas we call it the lineup, but we have them get on their radios and start checking out their equipment, start starting the saws, doing all that, checking their past devices, SCBAs and whatnot. And we have the morning briefing over the radio, just to exercise radio traffic with the captains on the radio. We have two captains at my station. Get everybody on the same frequency, communicating back and forth. We even use a dispatcher occasionally, just to make it realistic, to bounce things back and forth from dispatch. And then we have somebody have them call that, you know, issue that distress signal. The E-trigger, and we go through that whole process of communicating with the incident commander, switching everybody off of that original TAC, going to the secondary TAC. I feel that the crew is definitely more comfortable with the radios by doing that. And they have said it. They said they feel more comfortable manipulating their radio channel if they're not part of the rescue group if they're part of ventilation, then they're going to have to switch off of that primary tactical frequency. They're more comfortable doing that now because they've practiced it in a controlled environment, but nonetheless they have their gloves on and they try that. So, you know, the real test is when you actually get out there and have to perform. But I feel confident that they'll do a good job.
Well, that's great, Derek. I mean, now is that your idea or is that done department wide?
No, that's kind of our idea at the station. We felt like since we've been investigating this whole Mayday procedures and reading your papers and my involvement with the IFF and the IFC and developing the Fireground Survival Program and really looking at what, you know, what is necessary for that firefighter to know once they recognize that Mayday situation. And the first thing that came to mind was they need to know how to get to that radio. They need to know how to manipulate the radio. They need to learn how to listen for key things coming over the radio from incident command and from the RIC group supervisor and those things. So we just started simulating it on a controlled environment at morning lineup, and it's amazing what that does. It gets them very comfortable with the radio.
That fits very well with the whole ejection doctrine, because before every flight, the crew goes over ejection parameters for that aircraft. They don't take off unless they do that, and I think you're doing the exact same thing. It gives everybody permission that it's okay to eject if the aircraft gives us up, or it's okay to call a Mayday because it's part of my norm. It's just like it's okay to put on an SCBA, it's okay to use this radio, it's okay to call a Mayday. So I applaud you for that individual extra effort on your part. That's great. I wish almost every shift would do that every time they started. I think we'd be a lot better off.
Well, it sounds also, and listening to a lot of the comments from the two chiefs and the other captain, that, you know, there's a desire to have something in place that's comprehensive and that we can all buy into and that we can all understand what the process will be in managing that Mayday and what the firefighter is going to do. And hopefully, you know, the Fireground Survival Program that we're putting together will address all of these things, and we'll take the best things of the programs that a lot of people have already implemented, and that's what we've attempted to do, and is to learn from these other fire departments that are doing excellent things in regards to Mayday training. And you know, the next step, obviously, is to get that approved through the National Fire Academy, in which they're very interested, as you well know, and then having that accepted within each state, you know, fire curriculum.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're coming up on the end of the hour, and what I would like to do is just the one last question for each of you is, what advice would you give to other fire departments about Mayday doctrine? So why don't we start with you, Captain Wilson?
Smaller departments, bigger departments, it doesn't make a difference. I check into the five main Mayday parameters that you published online and in print. I would try my best, speaking for the organization, to internalize that by, again, targeting your most critical level in your organization. That's that first-line company officer, because most of us don't have centralized training. Most organizations decentralize their training, and it's at the station level, like the gentleman before me talked about. And you have to do it each and every day. I mean, you just have to remind the firefighters each and every day that if you aren't conditioned, if you aren't a part of this culture change, then we're going to lose people, and we have to stop that. So just begin by collecting that information, and then
beating it down their throats until they're sick of it.
Very good. Thank you, Cap. Chief Collier, what's your recommendations to other departments?
My recommendation would be just get out there and do it. The National Fire Academy program, you can do the classroom portion. Most departments have, or members have access to do the online training. Get the CD, download it, do the classroom portion, do the reading assignments, do the testing, get that done, and then facilitate the props. Whether you do that through a fixed fire academy or modular units, or Philadelphia did it 12 weeks, I believe Jesse said, that's amazing. We did it. It probably took our department with 50 to 60 members 12 weeks to do it with everybody as well. But just get out there and do it. And probably as important is continue to do it. I like what Derek said about, you know, they're doing it at roll call or lineup, or they're incorporated into daily activities, and that's going to be just like your aircraft pilot. He knows that it's allowed, that we're allowed to do this, and we're not going to be sanctioned for, you know, calling the Mayday. It's that cultural change, so everyone goes home.
Very good. Chief Bowman.
From a department's perspective, don't think it won't happen to your department. Mm-hmm. And from an individual perspective, don't think it won't happen to you. It's a dangerous job that we're in, and things happen. We've used the analogy of the fighter pilot and the ejection seat. You don't want that to happen. So you want to train to make sure nothing like that does happen, but you do have to train for the worst case. So prepare for it. Pray and hope that it never happens to anyone, but you have to be prepared in case it does.
Well, thank you. And, Derek, looks like you get the final word on this.
Well, I'd just like to say thank you to you, Bert, and also to Chief Bauman and Collier and Captain Wilson for their efforts, because – obviously, it sounds like all of you gentlemen are leading the charge in preparing the North American Fire Service for the May Day event. And it's amazing that there are a lot of different fire departments out there that are not doing the training as you all are. And, you know, we have to provide some expertise, and we have an obligation to help those who are just, for whatever, funding reasons or whatever, aren't online with it. And I think it starts with getting an interest and them understanding what the real issue of firefighting is. Sure, we've got to protect the public and we've got to save the property and all of that. But in doing that, our members need to know what to do in the event that if something goes wrong. And so, you know, there's what, 1.1 million firefighters out there in North America. We got a lot of people to train. So
we got that's great. I appreciate that. Let me thank my guests, Captain Jesse Wilson from the Philadelphia Fire Department, Battalion Chief Greg Collier from the Mount Laurel Fire Department in New Jersey, Assistant Chief Brent Bowman from the Prince William County Fire Rescue in Virginia, and Captain Derek Alconis with the Los Angeles County Fire Department. Gentlemen, thank you very much for this very thought-provoking and stimulating discussion about this very important topic of firefighter Mayday Doctrine. Where are we now? We're out.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.